was dead. The window was boarded from outside. I listened out for any sounds, but the silence was like a smooth, high wall. Still, I felt the presence of something trying to deceive me, as if the others were holding their breath, pressing themselves flat against the wall, obliterating their skin color to keep me from knowing they were there. So I pretended not to notice. We were very good at fooling each other. I cleared my throat again and touched my fingers to my lips. I decided to inspect the room once more. I tried the floor lamp again, but it produced no light. I opened the whiskey bottle and sniffed what was left inside. The smell was unchanged. Cutty Sark. I replaced the cap and returned the bottle to the table. I put the receiver to my ear one more time, but the phone could not have been any deader. I took a few slow steps to get a feel of the carpet against my shoes. I pressed my ear against the wall and concentrated all my attention in an attempt to hear any sounds that might have been coming through it. But there was, of course, nothing. I stepped to the door, and knowing that to do so was pointless, gave the knob a twist. It turned easily to the right. For a moment, I could not absorb this fact. Before, the knob had been so solid it could have been set in cement. I went back to square one and tried again, taking my hand from the knob, reaching out for it again, and turning it back and forth. It turned smoothly in my hand. This gave me the strangest feeling, as if my tongue were swelling inside my mouth. The door was open. I pulled the knob until the door swung open just enough for a blinding light to come streaming into the room. The bat! If only I had the bat, I would have felt more confident. Oh, forget the bat! I swung the door wide open. Checking left, then right, to be sure no one was there, I stepped outside. It was a long, carpeted corridor. A little way down the corridor, I could see a large vase filled with flowers. It was the vase I had hidden behind while the whistling waiter was knocking on this door. In my memory, the corridor was a long one, with many turns and branches along the way. I'd managed to get here by coming across the waiter whistling his way down the corridor and following him. The number plate on the door had identified this as room 208. Stepping with care, I walked towards the vase. I hoped I could find my way to the lobby, where Noboru Wataya had been appearing on television. Many people had been in the lobby, moving to and fro. I might be able to find some clue there, but wandering through the hotel was like venturing into a vast desert without a compass. If I couldn't find the lobby, and then wasn't able to find my way back to room 208, I might be sealed up inside this labyrinthine place, unable to return to the real world. But now was no time for hesitation. It could be my last chance. I had waited every day on the bottom of the well for 6 months, and now, at last, the door had opened before me. Besides, the well was going to be taken from me soon. If I failed now, all my time and effort would have been for nothing. I turned several corners. My filthy tennis shoes moved without a sound over the carpet. I couldn't hear a thing. No voices, no music, no TV, not even a ventilator fan or a lift. The hotel was silent, like a ruin forgotten by time. I turned many corners and passed many doors. The corridor forked again and again, and I always turned right, on the assumption that if I chose to go back, I should be able to find the room by taking only lefts. By now, though, my sense of direction was gone. I felt no nearer to anything in particular. The numbers on the doors had no order, and they went by endlessly, so they were no help at all. They trickled away from my consciousness almost before they had registered in my memory. Now and then I felt I had passed some of them before. I came to a stop in the middle of the corridor and caught my breath. Was I circling back over and over the same territory, the way one does when lost in the woods? As I stood there wondering what to do, I heard a familiar sound in the distance. It was the whistling waiter. He was in perfect tune. There was no one to match him. As before, he was whistling the overture to Rossini's The Thieving Magpie. Not an easy tune to whistle, but it seemed to give him no trouble. I proceeded down the corridor in the direction of the whistling, which grew louder and clearer. He appeared to be heading in my direction. I found a good-sized pillar and hid behind it. The waiter carried a silver tray again, with the usual bottle of Kati Sark and an ice bucket and two glasses.